welcome to Connections. This is our Friday edition, and I wanted to introduce to the listening audience Joseph Turner, who is an aerial photographer, and he's with us, and he's going to talk about aerial photography in the world of drones. Joe, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your welcome.
So,
and I'd like to introduce, is it okay for me to introduce my co-pilot, Karen Nystrom?
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Karen.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I spoke to you and Karen, but I listened to the two of you when you were at our Gloucester Rotary Club meeting several months ago, before we get into the pandemic phase of things, of life, and life as we knew it changed. But I was fascinated by all that you had to share, and I've always been kind of intrigued by the prospect of what drones do and how they operate, and I'm hoping that you can share that with our listening audience.
I'd love to. That was a very generous and welcoming meeting at the Gloucester Rotary. I think drones are becoming very interesting. I think the public is becoming very interested in drones and what they can do. It's amazing how quickly it's become very popular, and then for every positive, there's a negative. There are people that are concerned about it, and we can talk about both sides of that if you'd like.
Yeah. I noticed that when you were talking, you had brought up why drones have emerged as a more viable and economic alternative to prior practices. In a couple of applications that you talked about were like inspecting bridges and the use by fire departments.
Yeah, I think most municipal organizations, if we can start with them, are realizing that if they have a drone policy with their town or city, and they have a drone department, that they can use those drones in a way that's never before used. Some of the most important applications, the ones that are used most often, are search and rescue. Police and fire can, within minutes, find somebody lost in the woods or swamp, or even out at sea, within a few minutes, versus sending out boats or people 10 feet apart walking through the woods. The other applications for fire departments, which is just amazing, the drones that a lot of those organizations use have infrared sensors, and they can see both regular light spectrum and infrared, and they can spot firemen inside a burning building. They can fly over the building and find out if the hoses are being directed properly. So firemen are finding it an invaluable aid. The police departments are using it also for search and rescue, for all sorts of applications, and for the public, the general public, and contractors like myself. I'm a certified FAA 107 certified pilot, certified by the FAA. A lot of us are being used now because, as you stated, it's economically more advantageous to use drones versus helicopters or any other way of looking from a different vantage point from the sky.
Sure. I noticed when you spoke that it hadn't occurred to me that, you know, I thought, you know, you see something online, gee, I think I'll go buy a drone. But it's not that simple. I mean, the government has organized how and what people can do. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Turns out that drones fall under the FAA because the official answer is because all the air above the ground is federal space, and it's actually not owned by anybody, so you can actually fly almost anywhere except in restricted areas.
Yeah.
The FAA is now, because of the huge influx in people buying and flying drones, that includes amateurs, hobbyists, kids, commercial pilots like myself, police, fire, and actually the military too. If you don't have regulations, it's going to be chaos. The main concern by FAA is safety. They want to be sure that whoever is flying the drone pays attention to some very basic safety rules. And that's, I would say, is the most prominent thing I hear from FAA is be safe, fly safe. And if you're not paying attention, or if you're flying a drone casually and you take it out of the box and you turn it on, you say, geez, I can fly over my neighbor's house and fly through the garage and under the tree and everything is, you really have to be good at it. So a lot of emphasis is put on teaching people the regulations and how to fly it safely. So FAA is very concerned about safety. If I can mention a few safety things.
Sure.
You're not allowed to, we as FAA certified pilots and actually recreational pilots can only fly up to 400 feet. We can't fly near airports.
400 feet meaning where? 400 feet in the air?
Yes, 400
high, okay.
Feet above ground level.
Yeah.
We can't fly over people, so the temptation to fly over your football game or your kid's nursery or a wedding even is not a good idea, and it's forbidden.
So I drive by in Gloucester and I'm on, this won't mean as much to you, if I'm on Nautilus Road and I pull out my drone and I want to fly the length of Good Harbor Beach, I can't really, if there are people on it, I'm not really supposed to do that.
Correct. I'm not familiar with the terrain there, but
yeah,
you can fly over the water.
Yeah.
I don't want you flying over the people.
Not directly
okay.
over.
Not directly over them. So if you flew, for instance, 20 feet into the water, water's edge, you could do that. And if you're at a wedding and you can fly and look diagonally at the crowd, that's okay.
Okay. Is it afraid of you looking, maybe crashing into the people, or is it a privacy issue?
It's mostly safety crashing.
Okay.
If you lose control of the drone,
yeah,
which could happen, doesn't happen very often. I can tell you that. Could be gusts of wind or some other interference could knock the drone down, and those spinning blades are really quite dangerous.
Okay.
So they don't want flying over people. There's a whole bunch of, a whole raft of other things. You can't fly over power stations. You can't fly over airports.
Zoos.
Can't fly over zoos.
I missed the last. You can't fly over what?
Zoos.
Animal zoo.
Animal
zoos. Okay.
We asked permission to fly over the zoo in Stoneham, and they ran it up the chain and said no. And I thought they were flying over people because we often fly early Sunday morning to avoid crowds.
Yeah.
But they said they didn't want us flying over a zoo because it would disturb the animals. Turns out that a drone looked like a predator bird.
Oh, okay.
So there's all sorts of things. Anyway, the most important thing...
And you use the term we, and that I want to get that into the discussion for a minute, is you have a co-pilot, and she has a role while you're commandeering the remote control. Can you explain that for us?
Yes.
So I'm watching the drone with my eyes.
I'm watching the controls and looking at my iPad to see what the drone's seeing, and I'm intent on getting pictures and videos. Karen's job is called, her job is called a visual observer. Her job is to keep the thing in sight all the time. And the obvious reasons are the most dangerous thing, of course, is ramming into trees, telephone wires, and all sorts of things,
yeah,
or backing into buildings. Her job is to watch it, and she stands about 50 feet from me, watching the drone entirely, and will shout out. You could probably hear her all the way up in Gloucester when she shouts out. She's very good at keeping her eye on the drone, and I'm intent on getting a picture or a video. So there's, once the drone goes up, I lose track of it, and Karen's job is to watch it.
Do you have binoculars to do that, or you just all pretty much
I just do it with my own eyesight.
Okay.
But if I divert my eyes a little bit to the side or look at something else, I can lose sight of where it is.
We're talking with Joseph Turner and Karen Nystrom. They are pilot and co-pilot, respectively, of a drone photography business. And Karen, I want to ask you, and then I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you, we were talking about visibility and tracking the drone with the unaided eye. What's the range outside of home base in terms of distance that you follow the drone? How far out does it go that you can see?
About 3 miles.
3 miles, all right. And that's, I presume that's on a clear day, right?
Yeah.
Not in some of the fog we get. Okay. Joe, I also want to ask you about when I go to your website, several things pop out, of course, besides the incredibly gorgeous pictures. And on this one, it's josephturner.smugmug.com. The first thing you mention is that you are an FAA 107 licensed drone pilot, and then you mention that you're a professional photographer. So tell me the genesis of that. How did that get sort of maybe inverted or reversed a little bit? You were a photographer first.
Absolutely, yeah. I have a studio in Stoneham. I do portraits, weddings, engagements, all sorts of things. A couple of things happened. One is drones caught my attention, and once I saw the drone, I realized that the drone is really just another type of camera on a different tripod. So I can see things with my drone that I couldn't see from ground level. For a long while now, I've been climbing up on ladders, going up on tall buildings, looking out windows, trying to get a different vantage. Getting a different shot is sometimes the most important thing. So being able to see things differently is what happens. The other thing that's happened, not surprisingly, is that with the advent of cell phones, everybody is now a photographer. So they take their own pictures. And while that business is waning, drone photography is taking off like a rocket. So for me, you can ask anybody that knows me. I talk about what it looks like from the air all the time. I look at a building, I look at a landscape, I look at anything, and I'm saying, geez, I wonder what that looks like, if it looks very different from the air. And almost always, it does.
Mm-hmm.
No idea what it looks like looking down until you look down.
Well, the other thing I want to mention, yeah, that's true. We have we hired a drone guy a couple of years ago to cover the dory races here in Gloucester. The same boat races, I should say, and they go out to sea maybe half a mile and come back, and you can't see that from the beach, but the drone had a spectacular picture of it. But the other thing I want to ask you about, Joe, is your business and your career in education, because I never knew that there are now courses in colleges referring to drone education. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yep, there's a couple of things. So the genesis for me was working with Roger Williams University. I teach a course, or co-teach a course, with another FAA pilot to mostly first responders. We have been doing it live twice a year, and that is helping guys, men and women, pass their certification test. And once I realized that that was so popular, I realized that I could teach courses myself and through other colleges and universities, because it's an art form. For a lot of people, photography schools, camera clubs, and other organizations, it's another way of seeing. So colleges now will have a course with Roger Williams. It's a one-day class on using the drone for, well, architecture, art, landscape, photography, all sorts of things.
Now you've been doing Zoom classes.
Yeah, and now with the onset of the virus, I'm now doing it with Zoom. So we do classes a couple of times a week, Zoom classes, in place of showing up in person. So we do a lot of photography clubs, architects want to know about it, realtors, realty companies want to know about it. So it's taking off. It's really, isn't that a funny way of saying it?
Well, I was fascinated by all of the limitations and how much the government is involved. So if I go and purchase a drone, what other equipment do I have to have? And I gather that I have to send something into the government, or is there a number on mine that they suddenly know who I am? And how does that work? I mean, the logistics of it. Do I have to let someone know when I go out that I'm in the air, or will they know automatically?
In other words, do you need a blood sample and a fingerprint? No.
Well, no, not so much that. But yeah, just how regulated is it?
Well, there's several classes of people who fly drones.
Yep.
There's the first responders and so forth. There's commercial pilots, but anybody can buy a drone and fly a drone as long as they're over 16.
Okay.
The regulation really is, there's one hard and fast regulation, is that if you buy a drone, you're over 16, you fly it recreationally, you have to register it. That means that you log on to FAA and get a registration number, which you put affix somehow to your drone. So if it crashes, they know whose it is.
Okay.
There is coming legislation about having a knowledge test for recreational pilots. That hasn't happened yet. But essentially, anybody can fly a drone recreationally. They do ask you to register it, and that's going to become law soon. And that's really it. So you could fly a drone to your heart's content, and as long as it's registered, they ask you to be safe, and there's no other regulation. It's when you make money,
commercial
applications, that you must be certified.
Okay.
One of my businesses
is I'm a political consultant. So if I were to have you as a subcontractor, or if I were doing it, saying I could do aerial photography of the candidate, if you will, that puts me in a different category if I'm using it that way.
Yes. So if you pay me, or
yep.
you pay anybody to take aerial pictures, they have to be a certified pilot. They don't want a kid flying a drone and saying, well, give me $5, I'll be happy to do it. What's happening is that realtors who use kids to fly and take pictures of their houses and landscapes and so forth, whatever it is, the FAA is trying to crack down on that. The penalty for paying someone to fly a drone that is not certified is $25,000 for the person that purchases it and the person that flies the drone.
Wow.
That's
well, realtor, a disincentive to... Or an incentive to follow the law, yeah.
Yeah, so what they want is they want whoever's doing it, especially commercial, flying over, well, political rallies.
Yeah.
The temptation would be to fly over the rally and zoom around and get close-ups of the candidate. That can be done, but it has to be done diagonally and not over people.
Yeah.
And if you're a kid and you say, geez, isn't this terrific, I can fly and zoom over people's, It's very dangerous. They probably won't be using a visual observer, so they might hit power lines, which is the nemesis of all drone pilots, and trees, or fly into some place that has a radio tower, or near a police station. And what happens then is you pick up electromagnetic radiation, believe it or not. Flying over train tracks will emanate radio frequency interference, and what happens then is your screen goes blank and the drone is on its own.
An airport, right.
So, Joe, let me ask you, if I'm out in my backyard watching something or just having a picnic and a drone flies over my head, actually an amateur, and maybe there's a way I could complain about that?
Yes. I would advise you, if you see that, to call the police and say, first of all, the drone shouldn't be lower than 50 feet.
Okay.
And it should not be flying in a way that's dangerous or interfering with your privacy. So that's the big danger, is somebody innocently flying around the neighborhood at 50 feet. So people are going to say, well, geez, they're looking in my bathroom window. They're looking in my pool. That's the danger.
Right. All right.
And not using a visual observer.
Right, and I'm sure that's the case in what I've seen. I'm going to let Josh have the final question, but my final question, Joe, is it sounds to me with Zoom, the advent of Zoom and so on, that you have probably taken your classes, your courses, rather, to a more easy level. Not easy level, wrong way to put it, but that's more available for people rather than go to college. Are you offering these yourself, these courses?
I do. I offer it myself, I offer it through schools. There's one organization in Lexington, a community center, that's offering it. Community education center is offering it. I'd be happy to offer the course to anybody.
Okay. Best way to get a hold of Joseph Turner and find out about this?
Is call me on the phone, 781-439-7334, or my email, which is joeturner607@aol.com.
All right, Josh, thank final.
Guys.
Thank you.
Lee, when we were talking about flying regulations, and one of the things that hit me is you said there's legislation coming. I remember when Jeb Bush was governor of Florida, he was putting forward some things that about what drones could do and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, who has jurisdiction here? Is this a federal thing? Is it a state thing?
Yeah.
And at what level do cities and towns get involved? And here's what I'm thinking. I'm flying in Gloucester, and I go from Gloucester to Manchester, or Manchester to Beverly. Is it
right.
possible that Beverly has a different set of rules than Manchester, or does it really matter?
No, they won't have different set of rules. The
okay.
FAA has jurisdiction over, it's called the airspace.
Okay.
What you can see, if you're a drone pilot, or anybody, you can use
yep.
any of the apps, both of the apps, that you can see where the airspace is. It's
okay.
The apps are, and you can find out if you're interfering with airports. It shows up on your free app that you can fly at 200 feet in one place and 150 feet. As you get closer to Boston, the ceiling drops from 400 feet outside of the five-mile radius to
yeah.
200 feet, 150 feet, and so forth. So you'd have to know about that.
Okay.
So that you wouldn't inadvertently fly into an airspace.
Okay. And last question is the... Is there peripheral equipment? You mentioned that you have a laptop or something else, an iPad that you use to watch what the activity or to see where the thing's going. Is that something people have to buy separate from
yeah.
the drone? Or
yeah, most drones of say $1,000 or so. I'm going to make a distinction here. $1,000 or so have something called a controller, which has two little sticks sticking up so that you can make the drone forward, back, up, and down, and
yep.
control it closely. And that comes with the drone. But I use an iPhone or an iPad to control mine. And when I'm flying a half hour before sunrise or a half hour after sunset, it's called twilight zone, I have to have a beacon on it. There's a special thing you can snap onto your drone so you can... They can be seen 3 miles away. Other than that, there's no other equipment. I need to make an important distinction here. You can get a drone for $20. You can get a really good drone for $400. If you're buying a drone for recreation, please make sure that it has GPS connections. And the GPS connection means that before the drone takes off, it picks up satellites, and then it can be flown. And you can leave it parked in the sky, and it'll sit there. And if you push a button, it'll return home. It knows exactly where it took off from, and it'll land within inches. Cheaper drones don't have that, and they recommend you fly inside, which means that there is no control. The slightest little breeze will blow it into your drapes or your dog or whatever.
Okay.
So please buy something that has a GPS connection. It's built into drones of about $800 or more. And have an iPhone, and that's it. You're good to
go. Great. Well, I want to thank you and Karen for being guest on Connections, and certainly been very educational to me. And I know that while it was a curiosity to me when you came to Rotary and spoke, I know that somewhere in my near future I'm going to have a drone. So you'll be hearing from us.
We're hearing and Josh is going to take your class, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd be happy to come back out to the Rotary, any of those organizations, to do additional work.
Great. Thank you so much.
And okay. This was nice. We didn't have to wear a mask.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, really.
Hey, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you,
yeah.
Rich.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is Joseph Turner and Karen Nystrom. Joseph Turner is a photographer, and again, the quickest way to get a hold of or to see about this is go to josephturner.smugmug.com.